Good morning.
Good morning, Dr. Angelo.
Good morning. Is that...
Beg pardon?
Is that Turner Cowles?
Yes, ma'am. This is he.
How do you do?
I'm doing very well. How about yourself?
I'm very good. Thank you.
Well, I write for the FSU and Florida Flambeau, which is the student newspaper at Florida State University.
Yeah.
And possibly the most important question I can ask you is, may I have your permission to record our conversation?
Absolutely, and that's so gentlemanly of you to ask.
Well, thank you, ma'am. I certainly appreciate it. Now, I'm actually a student at both Florida State and Florida A&M.
Oh, my goodness.
As part of a cooperative program that the two universities do. I'm a student. I'm minoring in journalism at Florida A&M, so I have a little bit of background on FAMU. I guess I'm curious, what is it that attracted you to speaking at Florida A&M?
Oh, I'm a long-time supporter of FAMU, and a long-time supporter of the HBCUs.
Have you ever spoken at Florida A&M before?
Yes, many, many, many years ago. And I've had some contact with Florida A&M years ago with the then president of the college, university. And now, who is the president now? What's his name?
I believe his name is James Ammons.
Yes. Yes. Well, long before him. But anyway, ask me some questions. What else do you need to know?
Well, I'm curious what you plan to speak about while you're there.
I'll probably speak on the courage, the importance of courage, of building it. Not bravado and not a kind of ready-to-go-to-war attitude, but really courage. The courage to learn, the courage to love, the courage to say, I don't know, and I need to know, and I want to know. That's the kind of courage I mean. And so our history shows us that our people have had enormous courage to survive some of the hell we've survived. We've had to have courage. And so I will talk about courage. And I will not all be all that stiff either. I'll laugh and have the audience laugh too.
We're glad for that.
Yes, indeed.
Do you often speak at colleges outside of Wake Forest?
Yes, quite a lot.
Well, we're definitely excited that you've chosen to come to Tallahassee. We appreciate it and look forward to it.
I'm looking forward to it myself.
Now, I actually just finished reading I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. Do you mind if I ask you a few questions about that?
No, certainly not.
There was one part in particular that stood out to me when you talk about going to St. Louis to live with Mother Deer.
Yes.
And at one point you mentioned that you desperately wanted to act up so you would get sent back to live with Sister Henderson.
My grandmother.
So what was it that stopped you from acting up?
Oh, I suppose I'd been raised by Grandmother Henderson, and that wasn't something a young person did. So I wanted any excuse to be sent back. I really didn't like being in St. Louis. I didn't like many of the things that were going on there. And I wanted to be back with my grandmother, who spoke softly and walked as if she was going to court every day and she was the judge. She was just a wonderful, great lady. And she loved me a lot. And I really wanted to be with her. In fact, I loved her so much, I'd follow her, you know, really. And people would say, oh, Sister Henderson, I see you got your shadow with you again. She would laugh and say, yes, I guess so. When I stop, she stops. If I go, she goes. I guess she is my shadow. And that's the answer.
What was it that pushed you to try and publish Caged Bird?
Oh, I didn't mean to try to publish Caged Bird. I had agreed to go back with Martin Luther King on my birthday to do some work for the Southern Christian Leadership Conference for just a month. And I told him I would go only... I told Dr. King that I would come back for a month, but only after my birthday. and that I had to give a party in New York on my birthday to explain to my friends why I was going back with Martin Luther King. And, of course, Dr. King was killed on my birthday while I was making the party. And I just closed up and said I wouldn't do anything. And James Baldwin came to my house. I'd refused to answer the phone or to open the door, and he just knocked on the door and shouted. He said he was going to stay there until, even if the police came. And I opened the door, and he came in, and he said he had to take me someplace. He said I had to have a shower, which I hadn't done, had to eat, had to have a drink. And he took me to the cartoonist, Jules Pfeiffer. And there they laughed and laughed and told stories. And I started coming out a little bit. And then Jules Pfeiffer's wife called Random House the next day and said, if you can get this poet, Maya Angelou, to write a book, I think you'll have something. And she talked to Bob Loomis. It was 1968. And Bob Loomis asked me to write a book. And after a while of saying no, I said yes. And that was 31 books ago, and he's still my editor. About 12 national bestsellers.
Yes, ma'am. And I've read, I think, 3 of them.
So that's how I came to do it.
So when another thing that stood out to me was your silence when you were younger.
Yes.
And you talk about being pulled out of that when you went back to stamps.
Well, I was there in it for 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
I was in stamps.
So was it one single event or person that pulled you?
Mrs. Flowers was the woman who encouraged me to read. And then I read everything, every book in the black school. And then she told me I didn't like poetry and that I would never like it until I spoke it. And finally, she harassed me. And I finally tried, and I had left my voice. My voice hadn't left me. And so I started speaking again after 6 years.
And so you would say it was her harassment, really, that pulled...
Well, it was her encouragement. I used the word harass. I want you to hear it, though. She wasn't harassing me. She was encouraging me.
Right.
But to me, as at a 12-year-old, it was a harassment. But thanks to God and to her, she encouraged me to speak.
Yes.
And the poetry.
Yes, ma'am, and we all certainly appreciate that.
Thank you.
You also speak about some events that were beyond your control. And you've said before in the past that you may not control all the events that happen to you, but you can decide not to be reduced by them.
Absolutely.
So how is it you came to that conclusion? What was it that...
Well, that's over life, over time. And that I didn't write that in Caged Bird. I wrote that years later. But that's the way we all should be. We would know that life was, you would expect an A from a class and you get a C and you think you did all the work necessary. Well, you can certainly be changed by what happens to you, but you can decide not to be reduced by it. And that's a decision you have to make.
So,
now, Mr. Kowser, let me give you 2 more questions, please.
Okay.
All right.
What was it like to work with Dr. Martin Luther King and Malcolm X?
You don't mean that. You don't mean that question. Because how can I tell you that in 2 or 3 hours of talking to you? How was it like?
Right.
Both men were great men. And one of the things that many people don't realize is that both men had exquisite senses of humor. When people write about them, they write only about the portion that's part of them, which was dictatorial almost, and always saying the right thing and saying it correctly. Well, they were human beings, and it's dangerous for people to think that Martin Luther King and Malcolm X and Medgar Evers and Fannie Lou Hamer and Rosa Parks were other than human beings, because it tells young people, oh, they are too great. I could never be like that. Well, the truth is, they can. You can. And you must try. Because those were human beings who did some wonderful things and who did some things they probably weren't proud of. All right?
Yes, ma'am. When you say a national spirit,
yes.
When did we relinquish our desire for a high moral ground?
I don't know. It's been a long time coming. But it's so sad. I don't know when we started screaming so. And I don't know what part the media plays in that. When you look at the morning shows and people are standing watching the cameras, and when the cameras pass them, they scream in such almost orgiastic fervor and passion. And it comes out of that statement that everybody should be, you know, could be famous for 15 minutes on television. There's something we're relinquishing. We've given up something. And our children eat most of their meals at counters, the fast food counters, as well as the counter in the home. But to sit down together, as a family, we're losing that. And therefore, we're losing a chance to be intimate with each other, to find out what this one thinks, and what this one fears, and what this one hopes for, and what this one is proud of. So at some point, the thinkers must think, and the elders and the youth must come together and say, wait a minute, there's something going wrong. I'm not only not valuing you, I'm not valuing myself, and I'm not valuing life. So let us see, is there something we can do? All right.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cowles. And when I come down, please come back and say hello.
Oh, I absolutely will.
All right. I look forward to that.
It's been a real honor and a privilege speaking with you, Dr. Angelou.
My pleasure.
And I look forward to seeing you next week.
My delight. Thank you.